This is ESPN Radio.
You know what time it is. It is Canty and Golic Jr. on a Football Friday here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app at Sirius XM Channel 80. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We got a great show getting ready for the weekend. Nicole Arbach from The Athletic going to stop by, talk about all these teams heading over to the Big 12. The Bear, Chris Felica, get your money right for this weekend in college football. And Marcus Spears.
My guy, Mike. That's my guy. That's my former teammate.
See, that, and you know what, Chris? I'm really excited for this one because we talk to Marcus all the time. He's a great teammate for us at ESPN. But you know the Marcus, the football teammate. You know the Marcus that showed up wearing the fur coat day one back in the day in Dallas.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I mean, showed up with a Range Rover and a white fur coat. Now, God only knows why you would need a white fur coat in Dallas, Texas in the middle of the summer. But that was Marcus Spears. He was Hollywood all the way. See, you folks know the representative, but I actually know the real Marcus Spears, so I can't wait to get into a little bit of a football talk with him. And you know he's fired up about his Cowboys.
I saw Marcus living and dying with the Cowboys on the timeline last night. He was going live on Instagram because it was that kind of game. It was a back-and-forth shootout last night between the Dallas Cowboys and the defending champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Chris, it's safe to say we got our money's worth. A 31-29 win for Tampa with, of course, like what else? If you could script this game, if you're the NFL on opening night, you got the defending champs coming out here. Dak Prescott just off getting paid, just back from injury. Manufactures an unbelievable drive for the Dallas Cowboys to take a lead with just under a minute 30 left. And the cameras immediately pan over to Tom Brady to do exactly what we've come to expect from Tom Brady. Chris, if this is any indication for the rest of the weekend, we signed up for the right show.
Oh, no question about it, man. And can I say this? It's so good to have football back, man. I mean, I went home yesterday. I did whatever little adulting I had to get knocked out. You know, kickoff is an hour after our show roughly. So I was able to get dinner in, take care of all my business, and just lock in on the ball game. Got a nice cold beverage. Got to watch the GOAT and the Super Bowl champs celebrate with the banners coming down. And then we watched a hell of a ball game, man. Back and forth. It was a one-possession game the entire night. I mean, the NFL couldn't ask for more. And both quarterbacks delivered on a primetime stage.
They did, and I think that's the big takeaway for a lot of people. I mean, if you're looking for the immediate reaction, I think our football power index after this game, the Dallas Cowboys started off this season, I believe, 14th according to ESPN's FPI rankings. They're now up to 10th after a game that they lost on the opening night. But, Chris, that's the kind of respect people have, I think, certainly for what Dallas was able to do in this game, forced a bunch of turnovers. I mean, anytime you're plus 3 in the turnover margin, you know things are going well for you and you're doing right. But for Dak Prescott, coming off the offseason he had, where he missed some time during training camp, he's recovering from these injuries. That dude didn't look like he missed a beat. Now, he had to chuck it around the yard a lot, was damn near 60 attempts here. So, Chris, day one season opener for the Dallas Cowboys here. What you saw from Dak Prescott, is this a kind of act that he can keep up for the entire season?
I mean, that's the question that has to be answered. I would say it can't be. I don't think this is a sustainable formula to ask that offensive line and Dak Prescott to drop back 65-plus times over a 17-game regular season. I mean, at some point, something bad is going to happen in one of those dropbacks, right? Like, we lived that movie last year with Dak Prescott in the first five games. He didn't make it through the fifth game. Obviously, that was the one against the New York Giants getting hurt in that third quarter. But just with the sheer volume, the sheer number of dropbacks, you worry about him being able to stay healthy and him being able to hold up over the regular season. Now, as far as last night's game plan is concerned, I thought that was the way to go for Dallas because we mentioned it before. That Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive front is stingy when it comes to allowing yards on the ground. They weren't going to let the Dallas Cowboys run roughshod over them in that way. So I think that Dallas was wise to attack them through the air. You saw what happened to Sean Murphy Bunting going out early with the elbow injury. The Bucs secondary was already shorthanded because no Jordan Whitehead in that game. So it made sense to go to that three-headed monster of Michael Gallup, Amari Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb. And two of the three put up huge numbers last night.
It was a monster game for that receiving core. And you're right, I'm glad you brought up the game plan because so many people looked at this, and I've heard everyone talking today about balance for this Dallas team. And if you want to worry about balance for down the road, Chris, I'm fine with that because I think when we talk about that in terms of modern football, balance for me is having the ability to do a lot of different things, to be multiple, to have strengths enough to be able to do it on command. But the difference is now knowing when and where to apply those different skills. And you're right for all those reasons. Dallas had to air this thing out last night. Kellen Moore and company had to make sure that this ball was getting into the hands of their best players to exploit that matchup. But a lot of people were understandably looking sideways, wondering around. When you pay a running back this kind of money, what the hell is happening to Zeke Elliott? Ed Warder, our ESPN NFL reporter, was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning and addressed the lack of touches for Zeke during this game.
Was last night the result of looking at the tape and saying, hey, we're not going to beat Tampa's front seven, especially without Zach Martin. We're not going to be able to run the football consistently against that team, and so we're not even going to try. You know, Zeke Elliott played 70 out of 83 snaps. He finished 11 carries, 33 yards. He's had two career games with fewer yards and carries. Is that an aberration, and was it opponent-specific that they played that way? I don't think it was. For the reason that they played that way last year before Dak got hurt, you know, throwing it 50 times a game. And that was because, well, they couldn't get out of their own way. They turned the ball over. They got behind. Their defense was terrible. And they had to play that way. Last night was a choice. So I just wonder, is that going to be a choice every week, or was it a choice just for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? If it was a choice, then you really don't need Ezekiel Elliott anymore. All he is an extra offensive lineman picking up blitzes.
Well,
wow.
sell him a bit
hot
short
take from
there.
Ed Werder. Hot take.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. By the way, be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper. The one fans know. And, Chris, I think that's way too far. In all of this, reacting to game one. First off, Zeke is one of the better pass protectors among running backs and has been since going back to his time at Ohio State. He is going to be a threat in a lot of ways for this team. I understand what Ed's saying when we go back to the four games last year that Dak was on the field for this team, the five games last year, I should say, before his injury took away that season. They had, like, this is all about circumstance for me. When your defense is bad and giving up a ton of yards, you don't have the luxury of taking the air out of the ball and shortening the game when you find yourself in the kind of holes that they were in. And last night, game flow had them down for the majority of the game, so you couldn't afford to take the air out of the football late in that last drive to just make sure Tom doesn't get it back. You got to score to get up and actually win the game first. So I think all of this is such an overreaction to Dallas doing right by the game plan in this week. If it becomes a trend, then we have something to talk about.
Well, yeah, and I think you're making fair points about last night, but the thing that I want to focus on is I think this is a trend with the Dallas Cowboys offense under Mike McCarthy. I mean, if you look at the five games last year that Dak played in, and then you couple that with what we saw last night, Dak Prescott is averaging 53 dropbacks in that offense under Mike McCarthy. So I'm starting to wonder whether or not Mike McCarthy values Zeke Elliott to the point that we see with his pay scale that the organization did prior to his arrival. Like, it just feels like Mike McCarthy can take it or leave it when it comes to Zeke Elliott being a bell cow running back, because he doesn't necessarily value the position like Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones once upon a time did, that and what led to prompting them to pay Zeke Elliott that kind of money. So I don't know, man. I'm starting to lean toward this is who the Dallas Cowboys offense is going to be under Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy. My mom told me a long time ago, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. I'm starting to believe, based on the six-game sample size that we've had with Dak and Mike McCarthy, that this is who this Cowboys offense is going to be. Not necessarily a bad thing, because we see they're very productive, but at the same time, you wonder, is that going to ultimately lead to where they want to go, winning the division and making some noise in the playoffs?
That's the question we got to answer, because coming up next, I'll tell you the statement that I think of when I think of the Dallas Cowboys as we try and assess what they can do in this division and what we saw on the other sideline last night that is probably going under-talked about. We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming on ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Sitting here live, I'm getting ready. North Carolina State on the road at Mississippi State is where I'm at this weekend. So broadcasting right from Davis Wade Stadium here on Mississippi State's campus, getting a nice view of the scene here. It's going to be a beauty tomorrow, Chris. But
I feel dirty kind of rooting for NC State in this one just because they're a rival of Virginia's. But at this point, the ACC needs to take their wins where they can get them, man.
It really is. NC State, the Wolfpack, quietly holding up the banner for the conference after a disaster week one. So we're hoping that's going to get better. We'll see how that goes for that conference. We'll see how that goes for the game tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN2 if you're interested in checking it out. But, Chris, I was watching the game last night, and I was sitting there talking with Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, who's a big fan of everything that comes out of the Pacific Northwest, and we're watching Vita Vea for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just go to work. And Vita reminded me of like one of the two truths I know in football. That when you look out on the field and you see a guy out there that is not wearing gloves or wrist tape, or a guy that is wearing just a loose, like a t-shirt underneath his pads, you've got to watch out because that person would fight God if you gave him the chance coming out there like that.
Oh, no question about it. And Vita Vea was all business last night. He was giving that offensive line from the Cowboys that work. Up and down, didn't matter who he was lined up against. I mean, he was pushing Tyron Smith back a little bit. He gave Connor Williams some work. He was bullying Tyler Biadasz. I mean, it was borderline abusive to what he was doing to that guy. But, I mean, Vita Vea was probably the most disruptive guy along that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive front. I don't think I'm putting too much on it. I think that's what it was last night. I mean, I think he had 6 total pressures. So that's pretty impressive for the big guy in the middle getting it done.
Playing nose tackle, which you know, playing on the D-line, that's a hard spot to get that kind of disruption, but that's the level of athlete that Vita Vea is. And that's what that Cowboys O-line had to go up against. So it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Chris, as we look at last night's game, and certainly Tampa gets the win. They deserve all the credit for it. We'll give them that credit in a second, but I think we knew they were going to be a team we talked about in Super Bowl contention. They brought everybody back. Dallas was where the question marks were. So for you, looking at that performance last night, we've talked about their division, which is where it all starts here. Cowboys more or less likely, more or less comfortable in your mind to win the NFC East after what you saw last night?
I'm more confident in my preseason prediction that they would win the East. Like, I'm saying it with my chest. Like, before it was like question mark, just because we didn't know what Dak Prescott was going to be like. With all the injuries and training camp, he's coming off of the ankle and then with the shoulder, limiting the volume, the number of reps he could get. But, I mean, I think he put to bed any of those questions last night. So if that's the version of Dak Prescott that we're going to see, then the Dallas Cowboys should be able to take care of their business in the division because they have the best quarterback by far and away. I think the thing that we want to see from the Cowboys as the season progresses is that defense continue to grow, right? I mean, a lot of moving parts last night. You saw Dan Quinn shuffling the inside linebacker tandems. At first, it was Keanu Neal and Micah Parsons. Then he switched up with LVE and Jalen Smith. You saw with the communication in the back end, there were some moving parts. So I just want to see those things get cleaned up. Clearly, there were some MEs and some MAs. There's no way that Tom Brady goes off for 380 yards passing and 4 touchdowns if there weren't. But, I mean, I think that's the area that the Dallas Cowboys have to grow in before I'm willing to say that they're a true title contender in the NFC. But as far as their division, they should be able to take care of them people.
Yeah, and I think that's probably worth noting the delineation at this point, because I'm with you. What I saw from last night, this should be an easy division for them to win. What they were able to do protection-wise against that defense bodes well for a team in Washington who's going to trot out a bunch of dogs up front on that pass-rushing unit. What you're going to see from a guy like Fletcher Cox in Philadelphia, they're equipped to go out there and do battle with this division. But I still look at if we're talking about the NFC's elite, and that's Tampa, that's Green Bay, that's, you know, I'd probably say 3 of the teams from the NFC West right now, maybe excluding only the Arizona Cardinals, that seems to be the upper echelon. So is it as simple as defense? I know we do the old defense wins championship things, but is defense the difference between them and this division? Or can they be like last night where it's an opportunistic defense that forces takeaways and just gives that high-powered offense a few more chances?
No, I think they can win the division just off of the offensive firepower alone. Like, I'm not saying that they can continue to be as one-dimensional as they were last night, but, I mean, if Dak Prescott in that pass game can be that efficient and then Ezekiel Elliott can sprinkle in, you know, 15 to 25 touches on a per-game basis, there's no reason to think that that offense won't be enough to be able to take care of the Giants, who have serious questions with their offense, that offensive line, and their quarterback. with the Philadelphia Eagles. God knows what they're trying to do on the offensive side of the ball with Jalen Hurts. And then, of course, the Washington football team, who Ryan Fitzpatrick, a veteran player, should give that position some stability. But we know that there are some ebbs and flows when it comes to Ryan Fitzpatrick in terms of throwing the ball to the other team. So I'm just looking at the landscape of the division, and I think the offense and that identity is going to be enough to carry him. That's going to give that defense some time to figure it out, but that defense has got some serious questions that they've got to answer. Chief among them has to be who's playing corner opposite of Trevon Diggs. Because last night, Tom Brady was lighting Anthony Brown up. I'm telling you, it felt like Tom Brady was going to the line of scrimmage and checking 30 every single time. Didn't matter who he was lined up against, he was going to him. Whether it was Antonio Brown on that long touchdown throw, whether it was Chris Godwin, it didn't matter. Whoever Anthony Brown was lined up against, that's who Tom Brady was going to. Anthony Brown got targeted 9 times last night and provided a 155 passer rating in those targets. So, I mean, that's going to be an area of concern. Now, I know the Cowboys drafted a couple of rookies to play corner, and those guys are kind of off the shelf right now with injuries, but they've got to figure out what they're going to do opposite Trevon Diggs in order for this defense to take that next step.
You're not kidding about that. That was brutal to watch right there. Speaking of big questions, we got one on Twitter right now, at ESPN Radio, part of our weekend preview poll here on Canty and Cola Jr. Which team is the biggest threat to the Bucs in the NFC? We got the Packers, Cowboys, Rams, or you can write in other. At ESPN Radio is where you can check that out. But, Chris, as I'm checking Twitter for that, we have breaking news from ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter. The Dallas Cowboys offensive tackle Lael Collins, who started last night at right tackle for them, suspended 5 games per source. So we talked about the unit playing without Zach Martin. You lose another piece up front, and we talked about that continuity was going to be so important for them. So coming up next, we will get to more of that importance. We'll continue to update you on this. But again, Cowboys tackle Lael Collins suspended 5 games, according to sources telling our own ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter. We will get to that and some news surrounding the Big 12 next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Yeah, well, it helps them because they're finally doing something. They're being proactive. I think the last, it's crazy to think that it's only been 51 days since the news of Texas and Oklahoma being interested in the SEC broke. But think about everything that's happened since then. So first you get caught flat-footed and, you know, everyone's hurt and upset and shocked that they've been having these conversations with the SEC. And then you have the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12 announce an alliance and that they're going to schedule each other, they're not going to poach each other's schools, and they do all of that without including the Big 12. So the Big 12 needed to do something. They needed to be proactive. They needed to obviously not get in a situation where they were going to be down to only 8 members. And so they moved really, really quickly on this. I'm still, you know, I think I sent it like 5 times to different people today, is I'm stunned how fast this moved. But, you know, the Big 12 did vet some of these programs a couple years ago. I think there were some obvious choices here when you're looking at, that ad from a football value perspective and eyeballs perspective. And then one thing that, you know, Bob Bowlesby mentioned repeatedly today has been recruiting areas and, the caliber of player that they're going to get. And a bonus that the basketball league is going to be pretty darn good, too. So it's all moved really, really, really fast. All of those things I just mentioned happened in the last 51 days, which is not how this stuff normally plays out. But everyone felt the need to do something after the SEC added Oklahoma and Texas. And even if it's not, you know, the same as and the money is going to be very different, you are an aggressor. You poached other people. You got BYU to give up their independence. I mean, there are still things that the Big 12 is going to be able to hang their hat on.
Nicole, with so much conversation around the college football playoff expansion and tinkering with the different potential models that they would employ once they do decide to expand the playoff, does this move today from the Big 12 keep them on par with the other Power 5 conferences that are vying for more potential spots in the said college football playoff?
Yeah, I think that's going to be something that we don't know the answer to yet. Kind of this designation of what is the Power Conference, the Power 5, was something that came about from NCAA governance issues in I believe it was 2014. When they created the idea of like an autonomous conference where they could adopt their own rules and legislation themselves. And that's basically what ended up creating power conferences. That's what we just called them, the Power Five. So when you think about playoff expansion models and designated automatic qualifying spots, you know, obviously in a lot of these conversations we talked about, okay, the Power Five, they would each get a spot for their champion. You know, we talked about the Group of Five. It's possible that those types of designations shift, or at least the way that we think about them shift. The NCAA model is potentially going to be overhauled and look different, depending on what the playoff model looks like. Like, do we stop saying Power Five, Group of Five, if there's just six at-large spots? Do you want to have six if the Big 12 isn't, you know, exactly the power league that it was, you know, 2 months ago? I mean, I think that those are some of the questions that, you know, people are wondering about, which is, you know, again, as people are wondering if, you know, you hit the pause on playoff expansion and look at some of these issues, like, is one of the reasons to do that waiting to see what the fallout is of the Big 12, the new Big 12, and what that league looks like? If it's, you know, they just added three teams from the American, are they closer to that level of competition? I mean, just sort of just wait to see what it plays out before you give someone an AQ spot. That is one of the things that people are talking about as one of the many reasons that people are like, all right, let's hit pause for a second and see the fallout of this summer.
Talking to Nicole Arbach from The Athletic, senior college football writer, joining us here on Canty and Golic Jr. And Nicole, you mentioned the possibility of hitting pause. You wrote a great article yesterday for The Athletic about all of the different roadblocks that the college football playoff faces. When it all boils down to it, though, is most of that resistance still going to be about perceived slight on the parts of the conference commissioners outside of the Southeastern Conference, away from Greg Sankey, who are looking at this situation and still feeling like they were a bit deceived?
Well, that's actually, it's a major part of this. And I know that, you know, like, you get a lot of interesting feedback to articles and stuff like that, where people are saying, like, this is the number one rule of business. You don't, you know, make decisions because of your emotions. Well, I mean, what happened here has been very emotional. And I think that if you took out the playoff expansion piece, I don't know if you have the same type of reaction. Because then I think you understand, okay, Texas and Oklahoma want to leave a league, and they call you, you pick up and you say yes and you make it work. But it's that piece about being in a four-person working group, figuring out, going through different models, trying to say that what you're doing is best for college football and sport as a whole, and then, you know, knowing that if six at-large spots really benefits an SEC, especially with an Oklahoma, and assuming Texas eventually, you know, gets back to being Texas. So that's where a lot of the feelings are coming from. And, you know, as multiple people told me, the idea of process and communication and input into decisions is something that's incredibly important in college sports right now. And I think you're seeing it because there's so much changing. The landscape is changing so fast that people are terrified of not being in the room where decisions are made to craft the future. It's the same with the NCAA governance model and the Constitutional Convention. So you're seeing a lot of the backlash of that. And then there was always going to be a push for people who said, hey, business-wise, this makes sense to wait until 2026, take it to the open market, get multiple networks involved, and probably make more money by having multiple bidders. So you were always going to have that piece of the puzzle, but that part has obviously also gotten louder, coupled with, obviously, you know, these other conferences being very frustrated with what the SEC did and the way that they perceived being outside of that room that made decisions. So you're seeing a combination of a number of things, but spite and those personal feelings and emotions and distrust are absolutely a major part of this.
Nicole, did the television partners from the Big 12 have any influence on the school that Bob Bowlsley targeted to join their league?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, in any conversation, you're thinking about who would be most valuable. But, you know, maybe you can have those conversations with your partners, you know, eventually, because I think, you know, a lot of these commissioners talk about, like, hypothetically you do. But, you know, I think any of these consulting companies around college sports would be able to crunch the numbers and tell you that BYU gets X amount of eyeballs and, you know, and Cincinnati does this and Houston does that. And again, you know, the Big 12 said that this was a pretty easy decision to come up with the four schools that they did. So they had done the research on this in 2016 in a lot of these areas. And I think that they are going to be you know, pretty careful about what they say in terms from a TV partner perspective, because they accuse the American of ESPN meddling and being too involved in, you know, potential coaching decisions. So I think everyone, you know, you think that they would have done it above board, especially after all of that. You know, the American is very frustrated with how everything went down. I don't know that we'll really know, you know, who was involved in what, but I do think, you know, they are claiming that these were four obvious picks. And so I think, you know, probably any consultant around college sports and, you know, their television partners would have probably told them that these schools brought the most value.
Always about value, money, and egos. The college football story generally has very few central themes, and those are among them. Nicole, always fun talking with you. At some point, we're going to get you on here strictly to talk Ted Lasso. But until that point, we appreciate you giving us some college football insight.
Absolutely. I'm just going to, you know, sit here from today's episode.
Yes, we're all still trying to recover today. Coach Beard forever. Follow her at Nicole Arbach on Twitter. Does a great job covering college football over at The Athletic. All right, coming up next, though, we will get back to big news out of the NFL, how a suspension now impacts the Dallas Cowboys season that we were all just very excited about. We'll get to that after this word from 5-Hour Energy. Now, did you hit the productivity wall after a big lunch? Who among us hasn't been there? Lord knows I have. So let's let 5-Hour Energy Shots help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. With zero sugar and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for getting stuff done. Go to 5hourenergy.com today to find over 15 flavors to choose from. With flavors like watermelon, tropical burst, cherry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. But if you're out and about, remember, you can always pick up a 5-Hour Energy Shot at your local grocery or convenience store. Because they're everywhere. Back after this with an update on the Cowboys on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Chris, coming to you live from New York City. I, coming to you live from Davis Wade Stadium in Starksville, Mississippi.
Stark Vegas, as some will call it.
Stark Vegas down here in Starkville. NC State rolling into town tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. I am interested to see the Stark Vegas portion of things because, man, I was walking over here to the stadium, Chris, and they have already got, like, there are people tailgating now. They are not playing games down here, and I appreciate it.
See, now, what I had heard is that town really comes alive in the nighttime. That's the word on the street. Never been there, never experienced it, but you'll have that opportunity. You have to let me know.
Gonna have to take a stroll and see. Listen, it's all in the name of research. I want to do the best broadcast possible for this game, and so feel like I need to find my way around town. So we'll get to that in a little bit here. We'll also take a look at some of the games coming up on this NFL weekend and this college football weekend. The Bear, Chris Felica, going to join us. You see him on College Game Day, crunching the numbers and helping you find ways to go ahead and make a little cash this weekend. We'll talk to Chris's old teammate, Marcus Spears, our current teammate here at ESPN, as well as we get you ready for the weekend. But Chris, still kind of processing the news here. Cowboys tackle Lael Collins suspended 5 games, according to ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter. And we just got done talking about how this offense protected Dak better than expected with Zach Martin out last night. And now they got to reshuffle again the minute we feel like they've got some stability here, Chris. So does this put a dent in the hide? I mean, we saw them move 4 spots in the FPI here. Is this kind of a reminder that we need to be careful about too much too soon?
Well, here's the thing I will say. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys will have options once they get Zach Martin back healthy off of the COVID list, right? I mean, Zach Martin has shown position versatility. He's popped out and played some games at tackle. So, I mean, as well as Connor McGovern played against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I can envision a world where you let him stay at right guard and put Zach Martin out there at right tackle if Lyle Collins indeed has to miss the next 5 games. But then when you look at the Dallas Cowboys schedule, I feel like the football gods did him a solid because it feels like it's a soft place to land when it comes to trying to manage the absence of Lyle Collins. They don't have a playoff team on their schedule over the next 5. Then they'll have the bye week, and they can kind of get Lyle Collins reintegrated into that offense coming out of week 7. So, I mean, it just feels like this is a situation that's not ideal for the Cowboys, but one that they're certainly equipped to be able to overcome.
Yeah, and all it does is shrink the margin for error even more because you're right. kicking Zach out to right tackle is 100% the right thing to do here. Because you saw last night that interior was able to hold up against one of the best defensive fronts in football. Zach, for my money, I mean, hell, he played left tackle in college at Notre Dame. The guy knows how to operate out there and has done it recently. But what it does is, again, shrink the margin of error for depth here. And this is why you saw them chucking it all over the yard, Chris, and why we know that can't be the only way they do business. That's what balance is being able to have to operate different ways when the game plan dictates that such. But the reason you saw things like the air raid, things like spread offenses invented in general, it was to overcome offensive lines that weren't up to the challenge. And so if this group gets dinged up at all anymore, we're going to see more of what we saw last night, and we're going to see all the stress fall on the ankle, shoulder, and really the entire body of Dak Prescott going the course of this season.
Yeah, you have to wonder at what point does it become too much to overcome, right? Like we saw last night they were able to deal with the absence of Zach Martin, but I mean, is Lyle Collins being out for an extended period, is that something that's going to compromise the strength of this team, the identity of this team, which is the offensive side of the ball? And to your point, when it comes to the offense, offensive linemen are a lot better going forward than they are going backwards. So you do want to try to find that balance with this team. Last night just so happened to be a matchup opportunity for those three receivers that they could exploit early in the down and get some easy wins, and Dak Prescott was able to put it on them. They're going to face some opponents where the secondaries aren't as porous as the one that we saw the Bucs march out there with last night. So when that happens, are they going to be able to still be effective in the passing game and produce at the level that it's going to take in order for this offense to continue to put up a lot of points? So that's the question that remains to be seen. But based on the opponents that they have on the schedule, I feel like the Dallas Cowboys have enough to be able to overcome this loss.
Yep, absolutely. I think the line they're going to trot out there is just as good as the one they'll have tonight if we slot it the way that you described there with Zach at right tackle. And so from here on out, it becomes the smoke and mirrors game of all of this because, again, anything else from here on out. And we know the season's a war of attrition. I mean, hell, we've already seen the Baltimore Ravens losing that badly. And I heard Bart Scott talking earlier today on Bart and Hahn. That comes for everyone over the course of a long season. You're going to have to weather a storm like that. It's just how early and how severe does it end up being? Can you avoid it being a game-breaking piece like the quarterback? Can you have it be, all right, for the Baltimore Ravens, yeah, it is terrible for those guys, but it's at a position where I think you're most able to absorb some of this loss. Dallas has taken one big punch early here. They cannot afford another, Chris. I think that's where we're at with them.
No question about it, but I think there's something that we all can agree on. Nobody needs to see more of Terrence Steele. Am I right
yes.
with that one?
Yes.
Nobody needs to see more of that. That guy was a turnstile last year for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, I felt bad for Andy Dalton, Ben DiNucci, and Garrett Gilbert, and whoever else they were marching out there at quarterback just because that guy couldn't block anybody. So as long as they can avoid forcing him into action again, I think this Dallas Cowboys offensive line will be okay, and I think the offense will continue to go business as usual.
Business as usual, hopefully, for the Dallas Cowboys, who now have to absorb the loss of right tackle Lyle Collins, again, a reported 5-game suspension. We are brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward, Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, though, wait till I get my money right, is something that I'm pretty sure Chris Felica said on College Game Day at some point. We'll check in with him next on ESPN Radio.